So signals from substructure in the halo, and there are essentially two questions that are important there, even for the for our understanding of galaxy formation. Is the halo smooth or clumpy? As we see in the simulations, in N-body simulations of structure formation in the universe, there are many, many clumps in the halos. This is a controversial subject at the moment. And the other one is also a very controversial subject. What is the density at the center of the halos? Does it rise as a power law? It means they have a cusp. Or does it flatten out? And then we call a core. Now, there are ways to address these two questions if the halo is made out of WIMPs. And WIMPs may help us address the issue of cusp versus core by looking at annihilation of WIMPs around the central black hole in the galaxy. Now, previous talk showed some of the evidence for a black hole. Now, that presence or absence of a signal from annihilation around a black hole will give us insight on the galaxy history and the black hole history. And then the question about smoothness of the halo, well, it first involves the presence of dark matter streams. We may see some signature of dark matter streams. There is the story of the positron excess we just heard about that can be explained if the halo is clumpy. Then there may be bright spots in the gamma ray sky and also in the microwave sky as a foreground to the CMB. And finally, when we have directional detectors, we may be able to reconstruct even the velocity distribution of WIMPs and find if there are the streams or just a Maxwellian distribution. Now, where is the pointer?
The board. Where is the board?
On the board? Thank you. So first thing I'll go quickly is through this question about the, thank you, the spike at the galactic center. This was a paper I wrote with Joe Silk some years ago that the presence of the black hole at the center would just accrete WIMPs around it and form an increasing density we call the spike. And the annihilation rate goes to the square of the density, so there is a lot of annihilation going on there. And we produce neutrinos, it would be a very good neutrino source. It would produce gamma rays, perhaps too many, perhaps the right amount to explain the signals seen by EGRET. We produce too much synchrotron radiation if there's a reasonable magnetic field around the black hole. And here is a sketch of the density, because I don't want people to confuse the spike with a cusp. So what happens is that here is the sun, is the distance from the galactic center is a kiloparsec here. And there are models in which there is a core, a constant density as we go inward. And around the black hole, this is the radius of influence of the black hole, so 1 parsec. Around the black hole, the matter accretes. And this is expected as a slope of r to minus 3/2. This is what I call the spike. And this is a spike that rises from a thermal distribution when the black hole formed. That is really expected to be there. The point is that this spike will give no interesting signal. So if the dark matter distribution has a core, we don't see the annihilation from the spike. But if it has a cusp, then there are many slow WIMPs around the black hole, and the spike is much steeper, r to minus 2. And then it's just cut off by annihilation because there was enough time to annihilate the WIMPs when the density is very high. So this is the basic picture. There's a difference between the cusp and the spike. So the spike arises around the black hole, in any case, and it is important for signals if there is a cusp. And we get from annihilation of neutralinos, for example, this is a study with neutralinos, we may get information on the inner dark halo. For example, no signals in neutrino telescopes or in gamma rays will produce an upper limit on the inner halo slope. So on the left is no signal in neutrinos. And what is the exponent in the power of r to minus gamma that we can probe? And you see we can probe it just around where the current and body simulations are pointing us to. And if this is a future reach of an ice cube detector, where we can go to much lower values of the cusp slope. The plot on the right on gamma rays is interpreting the EGRET signal as a bound. And we also see that the gamma rays are powerful and we can probe the slope of the inner halo. Now, one side problem with this is there is a magnetic field, and we have synchrotron emission from WIMP annihilation. first the WIMPs produce electrons and positron pairs, and in the magnetic field they produce synchrotron radiation that we should observe in the radio. And the flux that is predicted is very high. For example, if you assume the dark matter is neutralinos, then this is the upper limit we get on the slope of the cusp. It's very, very low, much lower than what we get in CMB simulations. Now, there have been some claims after this piece of work that there may be a way to get rid of the signal by self-absorption. And recently, Blasi and his collaborator have shown that those claims are incorrect, and actually the signal stays there. There is a way out of this, saving the neutralinos, and that is destroying the spike. Of course, we could destroy the cusp in the first place, and we wouldn't have this problem. But if we have a cusp because we want to have a signal from gamma rays to be seen in glass, we can destroy the spike. And the reasonable way, has been proposed by Merritt and Milosavljevic, and that is through black hole merger. If black hole in the galaxy formed by merging of two almost equal mass black holes, then the spike will be destroyed, because the spike is there because the WIMPs of the dark matter are very slow, and having this process heats up the particles, so the spike is gone. Now the problem here is that you have to arrange for a model to work in this way. You need to get rid of the spike before the galactic disk forms, because we cannot have a large merger after the galactic disk is formed. It would have destroyed the disk. So this has to occur very early in the history of our galaxy. And it's not clear if the black hole could form in such a quick time. So things have to be arranged there in such a way that the black hole formed early through a major merger, and then the galactic disk developed. A theoretical understanding on how quickly black hole forms is not pointing in this direction. However, as we probe quasars further and further out, and we see black holes at higher redshift, and the theory of black hole formation may have been modified. There is another problem here that if we get rid of the spike, then we have to explain why there is a spike in the stars in the galactic center, which is, this is observed, they say data, there's a star distribution around the black hole at the center, and we see that there is a spike that goes as out to -3/2. Then this would have to be rebuilt after the dark matter spike has been destroyed. So this is how the situation stands at the moment for regarding signals from around the black hole at the galactic center. But let me move on now to clumps in the halo. This is the same figure I showed before. Now there is, as I said, there is a controversy about the existence of these clumps, and they may not be there because they're not seen in the luminous matter. But they may be there because maybe most of them don't light up. There is some evidence that has been claimed for clumps in other galaxies using gravitational lensing, but Dalla and Kochanek. These are multiple lenses on quasars that maybe explain, they have a problem that the ratio of fluxes between the different images in the quasar don't really match the expectations unless we put in some substructure. Now this substructure could be simply stars, or it could be big clumps in the halo. So this is compatible with CDM. Moreover, if we look at the stellar halo, there are lumps. This is a result from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey that shows the black region is, so this shows the number of stars as a function of distance, and the black region is many stars. And you see that there are clumps in the galactic halo. Now, the clumps in stars, they may well be clumps in dark matter. After all, they all come from the same gravitational process. So now the typical way of observing those signals from the halo is using cosmic rays, the rare cosmic rays, photons, we heard about GLAST, and antiprotons and positrons, we heard about heat. And here is one of the first papers on neutralino clouds in the halo. Signals from clumps. This was in the last century when people didn't know exactly what the profiles of the halos were, and so this was a very phenomenological study where this assumed some similarity between the profits. They're isothermal, so we assume there's an isothermal halo, and all the clamps are isothermal. Now today people have done better than this, but okay, I'll get to that in a moment. So in this case of similarity of the profiles between small clumps and the big halo, there's only one factor that enters. That's the product here of the mass fraction in the clouds times the overdensity of the cloud. And there are new signals like neutrinos from the halo, but these are really futuristic, I must say. The important thing is here that even without assuming, even at this general stage, there is a maximum rescaling possible and compatible with the current limits, or the limits at that time, 99. And the best limits come from the antiprotons and the continuum gammas. Now, people have gone ahead and made maps of the gamma ray sky with neutralino clumps. Here's a map from Kilcano, Roldan, and Moore in 2000. You see all these small clumps there, and these may be detected by GLAST. And another interesting thing we already heard about is the positron excess. So if you have clumps, so the density goes up, the signal goes up because of this factor that the annihilation goes to the square of the density, and we get this enhancement. So one can fit the heat excess with neutralino, with annihilation from neutralino dark matter. And this can be checked if this is really there. So first we heard about the antiprotons, and then the models that I'll show here, you know, with these green circles are models that are compatible with the antiproton result. And so the way to check if this is really due to neutralino annihilations is to look at, to search for the photons, because also we will get continuum photons and gamma ray lines at the same time, and the intensity will go up in the same way. So here is the where we expect the photons to be at the flux of 10 to minus 10 or 10 to minus 13 per centimeter square second steradian. And here's the reach of GLAST and Veritas Hess for one type of model. This is with a core. This is a dark halo profile with a core. And down here is a dark halo profile. This is an NFW profile. We see how sensitive the detection reach is to the slope of the inner halo. And another interesting way is that the synchrotron emission I was mentioning before also works for annihilation in clumps. And this has been worked out by Blasulint and Tyler this year. And this will give spots in the microwave sky. So these are foreground to the CMB. And now let me move to the other part of my talk, which is streams of dark matter in the halo. So here's a simulated stream. And cosmological simulations currently don't have the power to reach down to the scales we need information about, which is the distance of the sun from the center of the galaxy. So you have to do ad hoc simulations. Sort of you split the problem and you get to do the cosmological part first and then the galactic part. This is being done, for example, by Josh Freeman and collaborators. And here is an example of a clump of dark matter that is moving, falling into the potential well of the galaxy. And you see there's a four shots in time. This is coming in and being disrupted more and more and gets streams here. The color coding shows the velocity of the WIMPs. Now, what's the best way to go after that? I think it's direct detection. And we already heard about direct detection. We just have it waiting in the laboratory and see for a WIMP to scatter. And this is interesting because we may be on the verge of detecting neutralinos through indirect detection. That's because of a recent result on a measurement on the anomaly in the muon anomalous magnetic moment that may be explained by supersymmetry. There was a result last year that has been confirmed now with better precision, like 15 days to 3 weeks ago. And so with a new result, this is the range of cross sections that is preferred if we want to explain the G minus 2 of the muon with supersymmetry. We see there is a lower bound here of around 10 to the minus 11 picobarns. And here's the reach of the experiment. These are current limits from Edelweiss. And here is the CDMS in Sudan and Crest 2, and also Edelweiss 2 is around here. There's a genius and this Xenon experiment. This is a proposal now. So once we see those things, how do we really know that they are WIMPs? Well, first is the annual modulation that has been used by Dhamma. The Earth is going around the Sun, so if you think the WIMPs are like a wind, the flux of WIMPs is changing with a period of a year. So we can see this modulation going up and down. Now, I don't want to claim this signal is due to WIMPs. This is the modulation in the data that Dhamma has, and the interpretation of that as WIMPs is now under scrutiny and under question, as we just heard. Now, I just want to point out one thing, that this modulation depends very much on the presence of streams in the halo. So here's an extreme model with streams. It's called the Sekibi halo, where this is a radial infall model, which is not a hierarchical model, so it is orthogonal to unbiased CDM simulations. But here, what I show here is the direction where the WIMPs are coming from. This is a Maxwellian halo isothermal. All the WIMPs are coming from the direction the sun is going into, which is facing the wind. But if we have infall of dark matter, then there are streams. WIMPs come from specific directions. They form like a cross pattern on the sky. And most of the WIMPs come from the direction opposite to our motion. What does this do for the modulation? Well, first it changes the phase. So the phase of modulation is just opposite. For a standard halo model, the modulation is highest in summer, while if we have in fall flows, it is highest in winter. And what does it also do for us? It changes the spectrum. We have an exponential spectrum for an isothermal halo. We have a stepwise spectrum for streams. Now, most of the analysis for dark matter assume an exponential spectrum. Well, maybe some of those should be redone with streams if they're really there, or the fractional streams are there. And finally, we may even do better than that. There's a prototype directional detector, drift, where one can see in which direction the nucleus is recoiling after the WIMP scatters. And this is interesting for background discrimination because we can use the directionality of the detector to see if we can use the motion of the detector in the WIMP sea to observe if the WIMPs come from the front of the detector or from the back of the detector. That is a very powerful background discrimination. And more than that, we can see the recoil spectrum of the nuclei in both energy and momentum, because we know the direction where they're going to. So we measure the recoil energy, and by knowing the direction, and we know the mass of the nucleus, we can find the momentum of the nucleus. So if we have a three-dimensional spectrum, which I call the differential nuclear recoil rate, this is the number of events per kilogram year, per kV, in a given solid angle. And the nice mathematical thing of this is that there is a beautiful relation between this recoil spectrum and the WIMP velocity distribution. The recoil spectrum is the so-called Radon transform of the WIMP velocity distribution. This means this is a Dirac delta function. And it means that what we're doing here, we're integrating the velocity distribution along planes, which don't pass through the origin. What is the practical importance of this? Well, first is that one can calculate the recoil spectrum analytically, which we were not able to do it before. And we discovered this, that we get very different signatures if we have streams. If we take Maxwellian halo, then this is the distribution of recoils in momentum space. It's a Gaussian, a shifted Gaussian. Well, if we have a stream, then we get just a sphere. So if we could just measure the direction, when we will have a bigger detector, a super drift, we will be able to distinguish that if we have streams of dark matter or we have just a Maxwellian distribution. So that's one first thing that this formula allows us to do. And the second one is that we can invert this mathematical expression. There is a huge literature on this, especially because of applications in medical physics, like computer aided tomography and so on. That's where the Radon transform is used. So there are techniques for inverting that, which unfortunately require a lot of data. So they have to sort of be rethought for experiments that have just very few events. And I And here's a first attempt in reconstructing the wind velocity distribution. I'm going to assume two streams of winds, and just looking with an inversion algorithm, see if I could reconstruct those. And here there are the two dots in the velocity space. Actually, I must say that when I show this plot to my children, they ask me why did it take a full day to draw two dots. So this is a summary. We can have a wind spike at the galactic center that will give us excessive synchrotron emission. But on the other hand, we will have some insight on the galaxy and the black hole history. And from clumps, we get enhanced annihilation signals from the galactic halo. We get patch emissions in patchy emission patterns in the sky, both in the gamma ray sky and in the CMB sky. And we may explain the positron excess observed by heat P bar. And with streams, we get unusual ionic modulations with opposite phase. We get a distinctive Rico spectrum that is flat instead of exponential. We may even recover the velocity distribution from directional detectors. Now, for those who don't already know, if we can't find WIMPs in the galaxy, we can buy them in New York. Here's the WIMP bakery. It's depends a little bit on the model, and it is around, I'm trying to remember, is a 1,000 to 10,000 solar masses. Yes. Well, it depends very much. It depends very much on the model you assume for the streams. So that is, in the Sakibi models, the infall is radial. And when you just compute the vector sum of the two velocity, you just put the velocity, the infall, radial infall velocity, and the velocity of the sun, just track the velocity of the sun, they will come from the other direction. It's just a question of numbers. They're coming at a very, very high speed. They come in almost at the escape velocity. So that infall speed is much bigger than the velocity of the sun. That's why they come mostly from behind us.
Well, thank you.